Hello, everyone, and welcome to another fantastic night of Fandom Access. I am your ever faithful host, AJ, as always. Greetings and salutations, and look, I don't have to babble tonight because Karen is already here. Good evening.
Hi, AJ, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Just you and me tonight, huh?
Little shorter show tonight. Jamie is doing early holiday things, so it's just the two of us, which means we have four shows and a quicker show. But before we get started,
okay.
I recently read something, which I think we both are going to be like, eh. Cloak and Dagger was officially canceled.
It was, huh?
Yeah, not really surprised. That last season, we were both kind of like, what the hell?
Yeah, I mean, it had its good moments. They did some good stuff with it, but this season was not nearly as good as the first season, and I'm not surprised that it got canceled. After all,
but anyway.
I mean, yeah. So, huh. All right, well, one less show to cover next season. We'll replace it with something good,
go.
I guess. Yeah.
I'm sure we will. So,
yeah.
What would you like to start with tonight?
We have four shows tonight. We have Castle Rock, Mr. Robot, His Dark Materials, and something else.
Emergence,
yeah. Any of those. I know you like to hold Mr. Robot for last, right? Since it will be our longest piece of discussion, probably. Okay.
Yes,
it will. Let's bang out Emergence to start.
Sounds good to me. That's what I was thinking, too.
Okay. I just watched it, like, two nights ago. No, last night I watched it. So this episode has, like, a kind of a big reveal, right? That it turns out that Emily is the child of Terry O'Quinn's character.
Kindred.
I mean, it's not the hugest surprise, but it's a twist, right? I mean, were you surprised by that?
I was surprised by it, but at the same time, it kind of brings things together, and at least her motive makes more sense now, as opposed to just being diabolical. It kind of gives a little more to the story, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that kind of makes it interesting.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how it kind of juxtaposes everything because of Kindred's rejection of her, even though he did give her a job and everything, he never really publicly admitted to her being his daughter. So, she's kind of latched on to Piper and kind of wants to play mommy to Piper. You know, it's like there's a psychological thing going on with Emily. And then it juxtaposes because of the situation between Piper and Joe.
Yeah.
With this whole, it's getting very
familiar.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, I have a couple of, I think Emily is just a little bit too cuckoo. Like, it's an interesting twist that she's the real villain and Kindred is, I mean, he's clearly not just covering her. We had seen a couple of weeks ago where Kindred is in the mental library or whatever this place is where they meet. You know, he was in there trying to have influence over Piper also. And so, I mean, I guess it was really him. Is he trying to find Piper before Emily? Like, what's that all about, right?
Well, no. It turns out it wasn't him. It was Emily. She was disguised.
It was Emily pretending to be Kindred. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was never in there at all, which is interesting. Like, not really sure why Emily was doing that. She doesn't, like, the last episode, they played her as kind of really crazy and not a person with any patience, and that she was able to pretend to be Kindred for a while is kind of, I don't know. I guess maybe she hadn't quite gone off the deep end then. I'd like to understand more about that, I think, and what she was trying to do. I assume there's more storyline coming that maybe she, like, I mean, why is she so obsessed with Piper? Like, maybe she lost a child or is unable to have her own children or, like, okay, this is a horrible thing to say, but isn't it easier to just kidnap a kid than to, like, build a artificial intelligence sentient robot that everybody thinks is a child?
I think it's kind of, like, she's working on this AI project, and, it turns out they make this little girl, and I think somewhere along, I think a lot like Joe, I think at some point she started to see Piper as a child and not just an AI, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, in a way, Emily is trying to, she's like, I'm going to be a better mother than you were a father to me type of thing with Kindred, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's where it kind of, I think she got, she snapped some point and kind of got lost in between.
And she was really working out her daddy issues, not her child issues.
Yes.
Like, yeah maybe.
And Kindred might not be anymore, which was a little upsetting that we're going to lose Terry O'Quinn, it looks like, because that guard.
Well, he appears to be
like
dead, right? Looks
yeah,
like,
yeah.
He, looks like Emily paid the...
Under the door.
It was a very large puddle of blood. And so it looks like Emily paid the guard to kill him, which is pretty, it's believable, but it's very, it's the first, like, really low-tech way of killing it. Like, previously everybody's been killed by, like, hacking the Bluetooth connection to their respirator or something, right? So very low-tech. Sometimes low-tech is the way to go, right? But, yeah, that's kind of irritating that this huge star would be already off the show in episode, like, 8 or whatever this is, right? Like, I thought he was going to be the villain, and actually, like, they just tricked us to get us. They just put Terry O'Quinn in.
Yeah, he really was a red herring, actually.
Yeah, right? This is like Harold Perrineau being in Z Nation, and he gets killed in the first episode.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. He gets killed in the first episode. So you raised some really good points about, like, the parallel of, like, you know, Joe really feeling that Piper as a child to the point that she destroys, Joe, like, goes ahead and shoots at the computer in Alan's house and destroys any ability to, like, ever reset Piper's memory or like, program or whatever, right? I mean, I guess, I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess what she does is she destroys his ability to do it in that moment. I mean, probably there's another computer. You just need the right computers or whatever. You need to get into Kindred's operation. Although with Kindred murdered, I guess someone else is going to inherit it. Maybe his fake dead partner.
Maybe he didn't tell anybody. Like, maybe he left everything to her in his will to kind of make up for never being a father to her.
I
could see something like that happening.
Yep, I could see that happening also.
Because just imagine how diabolical and difficult she would be if she had those types of resources at her disposal.
Right, and she's totally crazy. Yeah.
So
it looks like she's turning out to be, like, the big bad villain of the season after all. And it almost worked, although, of course, I think 99% of all viewers of the show knew that it was going to be Mia was going to be the key to bringing Piper back to reality, right?
Yes. But I tell you what, I'm a little worried because – I don't know. Piper rewrote the code herself. Like, Piper goes back in, you know, into the mind space, touches the workbook, and they all turn blue again. And while it's good on, you know, at face value, I'm thinking, is that good that this AI can undo code?
Yeah.
You know,
right?
Like, this is kind of what they're talking about with her. Like, she's learning and evolving, which I guess is kind of good, but We've all seen Terminator. We all know what happens when Skynet decides that it wants to take over.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, when Skynet doesn't like something, Skynet just, you know, changes it.
So.
It's really, yeah. I mean, and also, so, it, I mean, is this maybe, is this going towards the point where they're going to have, well, she's going to eventually find out that she's not human, right?
Right. I think eventually.
I guess.
Even if she just figured it out for herself, whether or not somebody tells her she figured it out herself, I think it has to go in that direction. And, you know, not for nothing.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this is another show where we've said this a million times. Because of the type of show it is, how many seasons can you get out of it before it gets ridiculous? But I can see a direction where they, you know, and this is kind of like laying the you know, all the pieces out now. But I could see, say, season three, for example, I could totally see Piper deciding that she wants more out of life and that Joe and Mia and them aren't enough, and then the story turns into them all chasing after Piper to try and stop her from whatever she's about to do. Like, I think that would be kind of cool if, you know, if all those things that everybody warned them about, you know, it's not really a little girl, it's an AI, you know, if that actually comes to fruition where she becomes the most dangerous part of the show and they're chasing her trying to stop her. I think that would be kind of cool. If it went there eventually, obviously not right away, but
yeah.
So
yeah, that would be an interesting twist. To have her become not, you know, maybe not really the hero after all.
Right.
I guess yeah, go ahead.
No, I don't really think of her as the hero now. You know, kind of like you say, she's more of the plot device. You know, Joe's the hero.
Yeah, you're right. She's like, I mean, I've called her the MacGuffin a couple times. She's just like a thing. She's the multi-falcon that everybody's after, right?
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, and it would be interesting to see that. I think they have some loose ends to clean up on this show. I mean, so I think, you know, we've talked a lot about we really enjoy the family dynamic and, you know, Mia being this complicating factor, and, you know, they're like this really, you know, the family is portrayed so well, and we all love that part. This week, we had Benny come over to the house to sort of, like, babysit, and I feel like Benny has become, he's become a really useless character. Like, they have nothing to do, like, he has nothing to do week after week, right? Like, he doesn't really, so in the beginning, he seemed to know more than Joe does, but it turns out he didn't really know anything at all. Like, has he ever produced one good, actionable piece of information? Only his hacker got some, and then she got killed. So I feel like Benny, it'd be good to have Benny, like, get reassigned to another story and have to leave. Because I don't know what's up with that character. There was a time very early on what...
I was just going to...
Go ahead.
Go with what you're saying that, you know, like, and his whole reason for being there is to babysit Piper because he's the only one that knows the whole story about Piper. Like, you know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, but it's like, but you're right. It's like they just needed to find something for him to do in the episode.
Yeah. There was a time in the first couple of episodes that I thought maybe he was going to be a love interest for Joe, but I think, if anything, we're all much more interested in like, her relationship with Alex and this, like, really amicable divorce they have where they're all family, and, like, I think people, if you're shipping the two of them to get back together, right?
Right. I know if you're Mia, you're shipping for them to get back together.
Yeah. I never ship anyone. But
yeah, me either. What was I gonna? It was something I just thought of as we were talking, and I forgot what it was. Oh,
I don't know,
Chris. Every week Chris does something that I just really, really enjoy. Like, I honestly feel like Chris is the smartest cop on the show, and it's so refreshing to have these cops that are actually smart and figure stuff out at a reasonable pace. as opposed to some of these other cop shows that we've seen in the past where the whole point is them being dumb. But, you know, most shows, you know, what's-his-face's wife, you know, is being held at gunpoint, and Crisco is there to talk to her, and he immediately, you know, he picks up on, he's a smart cop, he picks up on the fact that she is under duress, and then he sneaks around back and fights the bad guy and chases him off, you know, and gets her to safety. Most cop shows, the cop leaves, and then in the second act, the person gets shot because the cop was too dumb to realize what was going on.
Yeah, and you know, I was afraid Chris might get killed in that scene. I mean, one thing I love about him is that I kind of expect him to not be a good cop because, well, A, because we are, like, as you said, we just expect it. We've seen so many dumb cops on TV, but also he's so young, right? And he sometimes really seems like a kid around Joe and inexperienced. And but I guess he's like this good cop and like an old soul, and he makes a lot of sense. But I'm always so worried about Chris, and then he turns out to like do exactly the right thing week after week. And I thought he might get killed by you know, these corporate assassins seem to be so skilled, but Chris knows things.
Yep.
Chris does stuff. So yeah. So he's really everyone's pretty likable on this. All the good people are likable except, well, Benny. He's not unlikable. He's just pointless. But
kind
everyone's really great. Yeah. Yeah. So
All right.
So big development, but not a ton more there, I think, to discuss, huh?
No, I think we covered that pretty good.
All right, on to the next. Who would you like that to be?
His Dark Materials?
Oh, his Dark Materials. Yeah. I just got around to watching that episode today.
Yeah, so did I.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Good episode, I thought. I watch the show sometimes on my 13-inch laptop and sometimes on a 17-inch laptop. And I have cast it to the TV also from the laptop. And I just, you know, the animals just look so good. I thought
Pan.
I thought Pan
just
could
Pan.
Not be any cuter. I thought Pan couldn't be any cuter. And then this week he turned into an Arctic fox. That was so, so cute. But I thought the bear looked great also, huh? Did the bear look good on your TV?
Yeah. The bear looked great.
Yeah. I thought that Lin-Manuel Miranda's character, Lee Scoresby, was an interesting addition also. And you know, sort of like that lovable rogue that we've seen in so many movies, but really great in sort of an Indiana Jones kind of a way, or more Han Solo than Indiana, I guess.
Either way, it's Harrison Ford type character.
Yeah.
I thought the exact same thing, though. Yeah, it was a very entertaining episode, and I loved the scene between Lyra and Lee when she's eating his bacon, and then she's talking about, you know, being bad at poker or a card game, and, you know, and learning how to bluff and everything, and then he turns around, and she's gone, he's like, she's quick, and she took my bacon.
Yeah. Yes, and apparently, I've not read the books, but apparently this character is nothing like he was in the book. In the movie 10 years ago, Sam Elliott played the role. So a much older guy, cowboyish. I read him described on Vulture as a Mark Twain style character. So they really went in a different direction, but I mean, I can't say whether you know, fans of the book will like it, but
yeah,
I thought it was great. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't read the books, and I don't remember the movie, so it worked for me.
Yep. Yeah, I thought it was great. And he sang a little bit. But that seemed to maybe be a little unnecessary. But, Yeah, I like them, and they are best friends with the, not best friends with the bear, but everybody's converging to find this bear, and I think they did a good job of setting up, like I think I totally understand the bears and their place in the society without having to have read the books. And we had to know the bear would join forces with the Egyptians by the end. But it was, even though it was sort of a foregone conclusion to me that the bear would, what's his name, Yorick, would join the Egyptians and Lyra, I thought they did it pretty well, and it wasn't like a waste of my time to watch it.
I liked when Lyra was trying to make her case how the bear was practically Egyptian.
Yeah. Yeah. He kind of was. She's really, she's really an interesting character. I feel like she's got a lot of wisdom, and she obviously has some sort of like abilities or powers or whatever, but she still always feels like a real kid and not like one of these TV kids that's sort of like an adult in a little kid's body, right?
Yeah. She, you know what it is too? She's very charismatic, you know? And like you said, her actions and how she does things are very kid-like, you know? But there's also logic behind it. So it played very well and written very well, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I feel like I less kind of understand the Magisterium. How'd you like that whole, like, Magisterium side of things going on in this episode? Like, the parts that were in the Magisterium.
I got to say, the Magisterium stuff kind of bores me, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to perk up a little more when Lyra and the Egyptians are on the screen. It's just, it gets very, and maybe it's intentional because it's the Magisterium, but everything seems very bland when anything with them is on the screen, you know? And, I mean, there's supposed to be this huge, powerful unit, and they kind of cower quickly. I mean, what's her name there? Ruth Wilson's character.
Mrs. Coulter.
She makes them buckle. Coulter, that's it. I wanted to say Coulson, and I knew that wasn't right. She makes them buckle. I mean, almost immediately. She's like, oh, I have Azrael. They're like, what? You have Azrael? Oh, what is it you desire? We'll do anything you want now. And it's like, aren't you guys supposed to be the ones in charge?
Yeah, right? I mean, for a big organization that I guess this world is sort of a big theocracy, and they're run by this sort of like quasi-religious, dominating, all-powerful government or whatever. But they do seem to, with the exception of Mrs. Coulter and Lord Boreal, the guy who, you know, the other bad guy that's sort of maybe working with her.
He's entertaining. I like when he's on the screen. That scene with him and the preacher or whatever the heck he is, that was a fun scene. I thought that was pretty good.
It was except that I feel like these are the only two people who have any spine in the whole operation, and like everyone is supposed to be like super like top of government, and like everyone just cringes in front of these two. Like they all sort of roll over pretty easily. I mean, granted, Boreal has dirt on the alethiometer guy. I assume he's either interested in children, or it's whatever, you know.
That was the impression I got too.
Yeah, at first I thought like, is he gay? And this is they've built a world where like people can't be gay, or is it just that he's a pedophile, or it's probably, I don't know. For a book that they always say is not about the Catholic Church, like that there's a big scandal going on, and they,
yeah,
torn from the headlines there. But I don't know. Maybe one reason that the Megstream is kind of boring is because every single person except for Mrs. Coulter is in it for 2 seconds and immediately keys to Mrs. Coulter. Like, what is it about her that she has every single person under her thumb and they're all so afraid of her? I guess maybe I need some more information on where her power comes from, and also like, what's up with Lord Asriel? Like, she's like, I have Lord Asriel, and they're like, okay, we'll do whatever you want. Like, why are they? And is it because
he's
covering dust?
Yeah, I think that's it. I think they see Asriel as a threat to everything they claim, because he's he's researching all this stuff and he's investigating everything. And if he makes his finding, if his findings ever come out to the world, then the Magisterium is going to completely disintegrate. Because it's going to everybody's going to realize that they've been lying all this time.
Yeah. I mean, their whole operation is probably built on a house of cards, and they're trying to preserve their own power so they aren't brought down, right? I think Mrs. Coulter might be a witch. Okay, but in this episode, Serafina sends her demon, which is a bird, a falcon or something, to go meet with that guy from the Egyptian.
I can't remember his name either.
Coram, Father Coram.
Coram, yeah.
Someone says, oh, it's true, the witches have found a way to separate them, to send their demons away. And so that made me think about how Mrs. Coulter is able to be separated from her demon. I mean, we haven't seen it be that far, but we have seen it be farther than, anybody else. And so I thought, that made me think, maybe she's a witch. Maybe that's why she can do that.
And that was, I thought in the first episode, or maybe that wasn't the first episode, but whenever she was separated from her demon, I said that. Because of the separation, I thought maybe she's a witch.
Yeah.
And then this episode kind of possibly confirmed it.
Yeah, possibly get some evidence for it. And it might also explain why everyone is so terrified of her and why she's able to, scare everybody all the time just by being kind of a bitch. And it might explain why her daughter has some abilities, maybe. Reading the alethiometer.
That's an interesting thought.
Right. Although clearly Mrs. Coulter can't read it.
Right.
But we don't know about the witches to know that, if maybe some could do it or some can't do it or whatever. I don't know. And then we had the end. So I would like to nominate for worst character of the week, the King of the Bears, who is a total jerk, right?
but that's also a nice piece of information that we find out that Coulter helped him with York. I guess York used to be maybe the King of the Bears, where he was in a position to be King of the Bears, and because of whatever they did, whoever they tricked him and made him go on his little rampage, apparently they all had a hand in.
Yeah.
So.
And so everyone's been, like, I guess, conspiring against Yorick, or a lot of people, but, like, I forget the king's name. It's not Yorick, but it's Yofer. He's obviously a terrible king. Like, he just wants to, like, have power, right? I think.
Right.
Like, he wants to be, he's like, oh, I can be the first bear in the Magisterium. Sure, I'm totally in. I'll do whatever you want. And I'm pretty sure Mrs. Coulter is, like, not to be trusted, right? And whatever is going to happen to him is not going to be good. and being baptized it's not going to be good for him, and it's not going to be good for the Bears. So he's the worst character of the week. So, yeah, I mean, it was so, gee, we sort of, like, really powered through it pretty fast and recapped all the action. I guess this was sort of a setup episode. We're in a place that looks like green, the Arctic somewhere, right? That really was an amazing...
Yeah, definitely getting colder.
Yeah, and it was a really amazing kind of town they've created there. I assume most of it was CGI, the way it's, like, sort of carved into the mountain and sits, like, within some sort of mountainous walls there. It was really great looking.
Well, that's one thing this show is never going to be accused of being bad at is the CGI and the landscapes. I think what we've seen so far, it's going to, and I think the further they get north as they venture into other lands, I think it's going to become even more amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a movie to me. It really looks like a movie.
Yeah.
It looks better than a lot of
about this.
Movies.
We've talked about this where, especially on, you know, something like, it's on HBO, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially being on HBO, they have that type. I mean, it was like Game of Thrones was like a movie every week. You know what I mean? When you have that type of production money, you know, and even some shows on TV have that same look and feel nowadays with the technology the way it is, you know. But these, you know, and that's the great thing about telling these stories over a period of 10 episodes or whatever, because there's more time to pay attention to look also. You know what I mean? Like a 22 season episode, 22 episodes of a season for a show, you got to cut corners somewhere. Something's going to falter, you know? You have 10 episodes, well, guess what? That money that you're not using on those other 12 episodes can go into your look.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So quickly, the guy who was sort of the sheriff that works for the Magisterium, who was sort of the Weasley guy in town, and then York almost kills him at the end. Did you recognize
the
actor?
No, I did not.
He played Dudley Dursley, Harry Potter's horrible, like, cousin that he grew up with. Did you watch the Harry Potter movies?
Yeah, I saw them, but not enough to recognize somebody from it.
He was recognizable to me, really. Like, he looks vaguely familiar, but it's near the end when he has super close up on his face that you can see, like, around the eyes, that it's him. He was probably, he played like a hated character in the Harry Potter series. This guy was, this guy was sort of Dudley-ish. We'll probably see a lot of familiar faces. I'm told that Lin-Manuel Miranda is the only American cast in the entire show. So, lots of familiar British faces.
All right.
Anyway,
anything else?
I guess I think that's good. That's good. Kind of set up episode as we're sitting at the gateway to the north, and I guess we'll get a lot more, moving forward next week. So, okay.
All right. So, the ever puzzling, that's I think the word I'm going to use, the ever puzzling Castle Rock.
Yeah.
I don't even know how I feel about it. I appreciated this episode because we kind of got more information on this whole satanic cult, but I don't know. What did you think?
Well, I thought a lot of it, especially the entire first half, was like really pretty boring because I didn't really care. Like the whole storyline is it's the less interesting storyline that I don't care about, right? And so that what, like, I'm like, oh, we really see the whole, like, okay, I know a bunch of Satanists like used to live here and are being reincarnated, and I didn't feel like I needed a really long story with a bunch of sex scenes pilgrims having sex right? There are all these French pilgrims having sex, not all, just this one couple, but I just didn't, like, I can understand that they're like I didn't need to waste half an episode on showing me the history of the Satanist pilgrims that are being reborn. So I felt a lot of that was really boring. We got almost none of Annie, which is the really interesting, like, I don't even know why they even showed us a little bit of Annie that we did. We got just a few minutes of her being like, I did it.
Being questioned. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess it was important for her to be taken into custody so that Greg Grunberg could have a line.
There you go.
In this episode. Yeah. But yeah, I didn't like it. I thought it was like not good. And then, okay, so at the end we get like sort of like, it really advances and it appears that the entire town now is, most of them are possessed. Those that aren't have become mesmerized, except for Pop. Except for like two people, right? Except for everyone who's a main character. I feel like the story is starting to maybe get away from us here.
Well, here's the thing for me. I mean, first of all, I thought Shawshank was shut down. Because I remember the one guy that works for Ace was complaining because he works for Ace because he used to be a guard at Shawshank. But in this episode, we see Pop visiting his brother. I guess it's his brother.
It's his brother-in-law.
Brother-in-law, okay. Oh, Pop had a sister, okay. I wasn't sure on that. So, but anyway, he's Chris and Ace's father. And I'm guessing, and he killed his wife, who is Pop's sister, so I can see why Pop hated the guy. Then he's talking to that guard, and he's like, oh, he was down in block F, and he was looking at the cage, and the cage was locked, and there was no clothes, and I'm like, what the fuck happened to Henry? Like, where'd he go?
Yeah, Henry's supposed to be watching the kid, right?
But remember, because the alternate reality, Henry was him.
Right, but the last thing we saw was that Henry.
All right, so we'll call him the.
Decided to.
So yeah, White Henry, yeah.
Black Henry put White Henry in the cage, right?
Exactly, and now there's just a pile of clothes in the cage, is still locked. But then at the end of the episode, we find out what happened to White Henry. Apparently, he's Satan. I saw that, like, when he removes the hood, and I was like, is that? And I was like, what the hell is going on here? Now, again, I see why they wanted to set this whole thing in 2019 so they could tie the two stories together. But is that what I'm supposed to believe? Am I supposed to believe that White Henry is actually not Satan himself, but a demon of some sort who they were, who the pilgrims were praying to, who gave them this ability to possess people, later in life, and that's why he disappeared from, because so that demon face we saw in season one was really his true form or something? Like,
there was a lot of speculation that he was the devil, and in fact, the original warden, the Terry O'Quinn character, believed he was the devil, and that's why he kept him in the cage in the first place, right?
And the thing that threw me is, I didn't know they were going to try and tie these stories together. I mean, it was being called an anthology. So I figured by anthology, I didn't think that they were going, as far as an anthology, I didn't think they were going to have the same actors play different roles like American Horror Story. But I wasn't expecting...
Yeah.
One of the main characters from season one to show up as a minor character in season two. It kind of gives us some answers to season one, but I kind of like the ambiguous ending better than what they've given me as a answer. Like, and those were locusts, so, right? That they were swallowing, so I guess locusts are able to hold your spirit, and then when they fly into somebody else's mouth, they resurrect you in another body.
I don't know, because they had to swallow those bugs when they died. Yeah, I guess that it, like, took their soul in,
kept the soul safe for 400 years.
Yeah.
Because remember, after Ace's character, whoever Ace is supposed to be now, when he showed up back at the hotel there, and he sees Annie for the first time, and all these locusts start flying around. And I didn't understand the whole point of the locusts until this, you know, now this episode I see what the point of the locusts are. But
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like this whole Satan stuff is just all over the place.
Well, so, and it's not, it was planned from season one, because do you remember when the two Henrys went out into the woods because the kid, was trying to get our Henry to, like, come to the schisma, remember? And where
right.
he could see through to the other side. And do you remember we saw this, like, settler pioneer-looking woman holding a bloody knife. We saw Amity holding the bloody knife.
Oh, that's right.
I forgot
that. Mm-hmm.
I only remembered it because I went back after today. I went back and read two recaps of the last two episodes of last season, so I could remember like what the hell was going on. And I read like in this recap that they saw a bunch of different people there, and one of them was this like pioneering woman, you know, a pilgrim woman with a. So it was planned from season one that this was going here. So. I don't mean it makes any sense or understand what the hell's going on with it or like it at all. I think, I don't know. Part of the problem is that I think Ace is part of the problem. So Ace is menacing and creepy, but he's sort of lacking in a personality. And so that makes his scenes hard for me to be interested in or care about. Like he's not a... He's creepy, but he's not, like, got a super evil kind of demeanor.
You know what's funny is he's more entertaining as Ace as opposed to being this, you know, whoever is possessing him. You know, when he's Ace, he's much more menacing and intimidating, and he has a personality, you know?
Yeah.
You're right. These pilgrims have no personalities at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about bringing... Like, her back and everything, and they're going to use Annie to do it. And I feel like I'm watching two different shows, because when I'm watching Annie stuff, I'm intrigued by Annie. It's entertaining. It's, you know, some of the stuff is even kind of edgy or seat stuff. You know, I mean, it's very engrossing. And the other stuff, I'm just like, whatever. Like, the episode got over, and I was like, really? This entire episode was about the stupid pilgrims?
Well, yeah, and so it seems like, so they had this plan that they were going to, like, die and come back in 400 years on the anniversary or whatever, but it does seem like they just got lucky that Annie killed a guy and dumped his body on top of their coffins. I guess they needed, like, a dead person to activate their second coming or something. Like, all that's not clear and makes no sense, and why he has selected Annie to be the vessel.
Well, it was dumb. Yeah, it was dumb luck. And he chose Annie because, as far as he's concerned, Annie's responsible for reviving them. It was an accident.
It's a ridiculous. Yes, it's kind of ridiculous and not well planned. And you'd think maybe he'd be more interested in choosing like the most beautiful woman, or like you think there'd be some qualifications to get Amity, right? To find a vessel for Amity, other than like crazy person, and then like then somebody, basically a person just happened to come by at the right time. Is going to be the vessel. And then, you know, Greg Grunberg, the sheriff, the cop character, makes this remark about they're taking these horrible chemicals. Like, we didn't know there'd be these mind-altering chemicals. I feel like most of the possessed people, like, I kind of feel like the priest pilgrim, the guy who's inside Ace's body, he seems to have access to all Ace's memories and knowledge. Because he's able to perfectly act like Ace whenever he needs to, right? And yet it was this very sort of like archaic, like she's taking the chemicals. We can't, like that sort of made no sense to me, because like, well, you're going to possess her and then she won't be psychotic anymore and won't need to take, like, what? I don't know. That sort of made no sense to me. It felt kind of dumb. Yeah. And so they're going to possess everybody with the statue, which is interesting to me because in the past, they weren't able to convince everyone. Like, remember they showed they were marching all those naked guys into a jail cell because they wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
But now all it takes is looking at the magic statue and you're mesmerized like Medusa. Like, it all, I feel like I'm watching a separate show, which is a bad show. I'm watching a good show and a bad show at the same time, right?
Yes.
The second show is a bad show. I feel like it was saved a little bit by having the kid come in at the end because finally these Satanists might get interesting, right? They might turn out to not be Satanists at all. So the kid is either 400 years old, hasn't aged in 400 years, or just popped through the interdimensional door 400 years ago to like possess them, convince them all, and then went away. Like, I don't know. Do you think he's 400 years old? Think he's a devil? In which case, he's not really like any age, right? Do you care?
Yeah, who knows?
I don't care.
Because I don't care about that story. And I was kind of let down that they brought something in from season one like that, so.
Because it's supposed to be an anthology and be like, you know, although like look at like American Horror Story, it's totally unrelated, but every now and then you get a character come through.
That works the way they do it.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't working for me. Mainly because the story is bad.
Yeah, that's why I felt like the kid and the cage, I don't know, is there a potential to save it? I don't know. Maybe there is no potential to save it.
I'll listen to that.
Oh.
That was how you heard.
I mean, maybe it can make this really boring horror story a little more compelling. I hope that it's not going to become center stage and sort of like be the end of Annie's story. Like Annie, the truth is out, Joy found everything out, the real mother is dead. Like in some sense, a bunch of Annie's problems are solved, except that Joy might never speak to her again. Are we now just going to have like straight up her like battling the supernatural? I don't know. We'll see. I'm concerned.
All right. Well, I think we've covered all that crap.
All right.
That leaves us. Mr. Fucking Robot.
Okay.
Let me just start by saying I have a new favorite word, and that new word is lipstick. Oh my god, when Darlene called her a cunt stick, I was like, I looked at the TV and I said out loud, I was like, that's my favorite word. I have not heard that one before. I like it.
No, I have not either. Rest in peace, Janice, or not. Janice is gone. I really hated Janice.
Gone.
I have always.
But you know what?
Janice is
But that's the great thing about her. Like, I hated Janice. I wanted her to die. But at the same time, she was very entertaining and very formidable in a weird sort of way because she was a very quirky character. But I kind of liked hating her. You know what I mean? She was kind of like one of those characters you love to hate. But how badass and epic was the way she went out? I mean, dumb. With a knife in her chest, manages to, you know, cut the guy. I mean, it was beautifully planned. Cuts the guy's Achilles, who falls on the floor, grabs the gun, shoots everybody. I mean, that was just amazing. I was like, Artie and I both were like, yeah! I absolutely loved that. That was so great. And everything leading up to it, too. The switcheroo and the family. Because I was like, oh, my God. I was like, what's the point of stabbing her if she's going to take her family anyway? You know? And then just to find out that Dom actually had somebody take her family and kill all the Dark Army people. I mean, that was just brilliant. I mean, the whole thing. And, I mean, and Darlene, and you know, watching her agonize over giving up Elliot to save Dom, and the look on her face when Janice reveals that Dom pleasures herself to the interrogation video.
Yeah.
So great.
I mean,
all of it. I just.
That seems like something that, like, when the Dark Army is running your entire life, like, you should realize that they certainly have hacked your computer and know everything that you're running on your machine,
yeah.
Right? Like, you should not have been at all surprised that the Dark Army totally knew that. She did seem, like, totally shocked and embarrassed when it all came out. It was kind of great. I hate Janice. I never... So the previous henchman, the previous Dark Army henchman who was played by, was that Chaz Palminteri? No, that was, his name is escaping me. He plays the boyfriend on Will and Grace. His name's away from me right now. Yeah, because I said the wrong actor's name. That guy was a horrible guy also, but I found him more entertaining, and more fun to watch. Janice was just so horrible every moment that she was on the screen. But it was a great episode. She had a great performance. She had a great, I think my favorite part was the look on her face when she realized every single Dark Army guy was dead and nobody was going to answer their phone. And she had this, like, realization, and there was, like, this look of confusion across her face. Like, she never looked afraid because she was, like, didn't really get it, right? That look on her face was awesome. And then she gets, like, so mad, and she's like, you don't know who you're dealing with. And Deegan is like, yeah, I've heard it before. Hangs up on her. I love the way they played that, you know, we saw Dom interviewing him a couple weeks ago, and I had forgotten about him. Like, this is a show that, like, you should never forget about anyone, because every single thing that you see is going to come into play later, right? There's pretty much no throwaway characters or scenes on the show, and yet I had forgotten about him and considered him a threat, I totally forgot about him. And then he comes back and, you know, plays this pivotal role, and Dom has completely outsmarted the Dark Army in terms of their leverage over her. She managed to hire this guy who's a total, like, badass killer, his crew, like, you know. I mean, the Dark Army, they're skilled, but they're not street fighters, right? And so this guy just, like, gets them all killed. Kidnap, you know, he's excellent at disappearing people. He gets the whole family, saves everyone, and, like, you know, if Dom dies right there, she'd be okay knowing that her family had been saved. I mean, one weak part of it, so I agree with you, like, you know, the anguish that Darlene went through, like, not wanting to give up Elliot's location, but not wanting to see Dominique die. Was totally believable, but I still don't really buy this sort of thing between Dom and Darlene. I just don't, like, you know, they didn't really know each other that well. Darlene really hated Dom. And then when they had sex, Darlene was only using her to get her badge. Like, there was, you know, maybe Dom, like, felt something, but Darlene didn't, and I don't really buy. I mean, I believe that Darlene doesn't want to see another human being die right in front of her, and I believe that Darlene feels really bad for having ruined Dom's life. The fact that Dom never, ever, ever stops harping on every single time she speaks to Darlene. but I don't really see like a romantic connection between them. I think Dom is just like desperate and thinks Darlene is hot. I mean, are you seeing something there that I don't?
I think there's more to it than just that. I mean, yeah, Darlene was using her, but I think it was a happy accident type of thing, kind of like what Elliot went through with Olivia. I definitely think there's more between Dom and Darlene than just the sex that night. I think at the very least, there's a definite admiration of each other. Even though Dom is so, I think that's the thing. I think that's part of the reason Dom is, maybe the feelings are stronger for Dom than Darlene, but I think that could be part of the reason that Dom was so angry with Darlene, telling her, you ruined my life and everything, because somebody you don't, if you didn't care about somebody at all or anything, I don't think she would have had as strong of a reaction.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's more there. I agree there's more there because the show tells us there's something there, not because I see it. I don't think it's earned.
I get what you're saying. I could definitely say I see something from time to time. You know? Either that or Darlene's just a really good actor. And I don't mean the actress who plays Darlene. I mean the Darlene plays the person acting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Darlene, the character. I mean, with all that said, it was still really great. And as I said, I do really believe that Darlene was torn and doesn't want to see Dom's family get killed, doesn't want to see Dom, like, die in front of her. And, I think it was really great to see Darlene in a situation that she totally could not do anything about. Like, we see her so many times talk her way out, hack her way out. If she has any piece of technology, she can totally, like, figure shit out. But, you know, just her sitting, like, she did really nothing this week because she couldn't do anything proactive to stop that situation. It had to be Dom, right? And it was kind of interesting seeing her in this really terrible position, this really impotent kind of position. Yeah, I thought, I mean, that was great. That was like a great episode in itself. I mean, it was most of the episode, right? The Elliot stuff was a little, how'd you feel about the whole Elliot side of it?
The Elliot stuff, you know, I talked about last week how I really didn't like the whole molestation storyline and everything. But I gotta say, it's what they gave us. And I think they've done a beautiful, I mean, it's one episode later, and it was only half the episode, and I think they've done a great job with it. I mean, that scene with Mr. Robot and Elliot at the end, I thought that was really great work between Christian Slater and Remy. I mean, that was just, I thought it was a very powerful scene. I thought it was just done beautifully. I mean, you know, to hear Mr. Robot, you know, I think we really see the core of Mr. Robot. And it's so hard because, you know, we see Christian Slater on the screen, and sometimes as a viewer, you know, I remember that he's part of Elliot, but it's like we forget sometimes. So that conversation between the two of them, I just thought it was really great. And like I said, I was disappointed with where the storyline was going. But I can forgive that now. I mean, I'm all on board. You know what? Screw his dad. You know, it almost like that scene and the things they said in it kind of made me see things in a different light too, you know, because Mr. Robot isn't the dad he had. He's the dad he needed, which is why we do see a few, you know, flashbacks of good time, you know, happy times between him and his father, because there were some good times, you know. Those could be times before he started molesting him. So, I put it simply, I guess I'm on board with the storyline because I had no choice, but it just, that scene just really brought it all together for me. And Let me ask you something, though. I guarantee they did this on purpose, but when you looked at that key when he first took it out of the little pouch, did you not think it had something to do with E-Corp? Because a key, I know it's an old-fashioned key, but it really was an E-Corp.
Yeah,
it was shaped,
it looked like it was shaped like an E, right?
Yeah. And do you think the kid's the third personality? I feel like... I'm asking, do you think that the kid is a third personality, or do you think that maybe he's a fourth personality and we haven't met the third one that they're talking about yet? Like, is it possible that kid was the third personality when Darlene told him about Vera?
I don't know. I mean, so as I was watching that, I was trying to remind myself that the personalities are not like walking around. They're not hallucinations. Like, Elliot doesn't. Like, I never felt like Elliot sees Mr. Robot. Mr. Robot is a representation to us of what's going on in Elliot's head, and also Elliot does. It's a representation to us of when that personality is speaking out of Elliot's mouth, right? And he did appear to see the kid, like, standing ahead of him and leaving him
mm-hmm.
in a way that he doesn't always, like, I mean, yes, that was in his head, and it was this other personality conversation. I don't know. I felt an unusual presentation, and not usually the way they present Mr. Robot. We might see him like walking in front of Elliot, but they're together. And I don't know if that kid's a third personality. I just felt like Elliot's had all these memories unleashed upon him in the last, like, hour of his life, right? And these horrible memories of his father. And now he's putting together memories of, like, himself, like, you know, hiding the key.
Right.
Do you think it's other personality? Do you think it's Mr. Robot? Like, do you think...
The one,
like,
the kid was talking
Mr.
to?
Like, it's Mr. Robot, like, in the guise of another person. I mean, I guess Mr. Robot couldn't really
I think it's definitely set for personalities, because in the beginning, when we see Elliot as a kid, we don't see who he's talking to, but we see him talking to somebody, which we are assuming is Mr. Robot when he hides the key.
Yeah.
And now I think that, for one thing, I definitely think, even though, you know, it's in his head, I really think he visualizes and hallucinates these other parts of his mind when he's talking to them, because otherwise, I know they're doing it for us as a viewer, but I really think Elliot hallucinates them also, because before he realized that Mr. Robot was part of himself, he was talking to Mr. Robot, following Mr. Robot around, you know what I mean? He thought he was sitting next to Mr. Robot on the on the pier when he pushed himself off.
Yeah, God, I also feel like I have to rewatch the scene when we first saw the kid, where Elliot's sitting in the chair in the boardroom, and the woman comes in and says, "You're not supposed to be sitting there. It's not your seat. Oh, you know, we're waiting for him. Who, Mr. Robot? No, the other one. No, Elliot? No, the other one, right?" So, like...
Which I think is interesting. See, and that's the thing that keeps throwing me in that scene, is that is Elliot talking to his mother, and he said, but he refers to himself like he refers, he refers to Elliot as another personality. You know, he Mr. Robot, no, Elliot, no, the other one. So I'm almost
that
confuses me.
Like, is that scene, like, basically inside Elliot's head, and it's the personalities, like, negotiating with each other of who gets to, like, be in control, or, like, obviously, that's not Elliot, you know, we didn't see Rami Malek's body sitting in a conference room with the kid, you know, with the kid next to him and talking the way we see Mr. Robot, like, when Mr. Robot takes control.
Right.
Either Elliot loses time and we don't see it. Like a lot of things Mr. Robot did, we never saw because Elliot lost the time. And now we see Mr. Robot all the time because they're in constant state of negotiation. And so, with, like, we didn't see Rami Malek sitting in the chair with the kid, right? Or we didn't, you know, sometimes you'll see the, you'll see Mr. Robot in the chair, when Darlene talks to him, you see Rami Malek's body, right? Like Darlene never sees,
you know,
Christian Slater. She only sees Rami.
Well, yeah, obviously. You know what's interesting is, as much as we can speculate about it, until they reveal it, we're not going to know what's going on. but the thing, you know, the great thing is, once they do, we're going to, I really feel we're going to have that aha moment. We're going to be like, oh, now everything else makes sense. Gotcha. You know, type of thing.
Yeah. I thought, so I didn't necessarily really love the whole thing with Elliot going to the museum, but, you know, it's the kid is trying to, like, give Elliot this one little piece of, like, memory of him, like, trying to fight back in a way, so he doesn't, like,
yeah.
I mean, it's like another personality trying to protect Elliot in a way. Like, Elliot is completely breaking down now, right? He's almost incapacitated. And Mr. Robot explains, you know, how Elliot created Mr. Robot to protect him. And I feel like the little kid is, like, kind of trying to protect Elliot a little bit right now from having a complete, like, meltdown and inability to do anything. I also loved the Mr., you know, that last conversation with Mr. Robot. Christian Slater was fantastic. I like Christian Slater, but I've never thought of him as an actor who carries these, like, very emotional and nuanced kind of scenes. This is, I mean, I think some of the greatest work I've ever seen him do. There's a point where Mr. Robot says, you know, I'm not your father. And I felt like that was, like, maybe you and I talked about that last week, that we're like, you know, remember, it's not his father. It's just a personality that, like, is the father that he needed to have. And I felt like that was in this week's episode to explain to everyone who didn't listen to you and me on the podcast last week when we explained it. but I think there's a, like, viewers need to be reminded, like, as you said, like, it's hard to remember that he's not Elliot's father. That he's not a character on his own. That he is Elliot. And I said out loud to the TV. So as we're moving towards the end of this show, Elliot has a big job to do in the next hour or two, and he's like, I don't think I can do it. He's incapacitated. He's, like, completely, like, you know, shattered and can't do anything. And there was a moment when Elliot says, I don't think I can do it, and out loud to my TV, I said, oh, but Mr. Robot can.
I felt the same thing. I kept waiting for him to actually, when he said, I don't think I can do it, and the apology said, I'm sorry, I don't think I can do it. I kept waiting for Mr. Robot to say, but I can.
Yeah, yeah. Like, one obvious solution is like, can he give Mr. Robot control and let Mr. Robot complete the plan? You know, in the end, I mean, it would be interesting if in the end, Elliot, you know, it was really Mr. Robot who set 5-9, who did 5-9, not really Elliot. Like, it was, right? It was Mr. Robot when he was in control. He's really behind 5-9. And so,
you know what?
It would be fitting if he had to finish it.
Right. You know what I thought about in that scene, actually, when Elliot says, I can't do it? Something I thought about, which maybe they'll address further, but Elliot's, everything started, 5-9 and everything started because of his anger over the death of his father. You know, his dad died because of his company, the whole Washington Township fiasco. And now that he's remembering the truth about his father, it's almost like, who cares if the bad guys get away with it now? You know? That's what his driving force has always been. So now it's kind of like, what's the point? I mean, they're still evil people, and he should still take them down. But his driving force is gone. And they, like I said, they didn't really address it, and maybe they will, or maybe they'll just gloss over it. But that's something I was thinking as part of his reasoning to why he can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, that's... I mean, any of this could be, like, if we thought the show was going to end, I mean, we would never think this, but if anyone thinks this gonna show is going to end by Elliot, like, you know, straight up, like, robbing the Deus Group, taking down Evil Corp, and then somehow fixing 5-9, like, that's not the show that we're watching, right?
No. Well, he already fixed 5-9, sort of.
I mean, yeah, he sort of did. He sort of did. You're right. And we haven't heard anything about the DRC, like, about White Rose's project in the DRC in, like, several weeks now.
Well,
we're going to hear about it next
DRC,
week, I think.
Well, I mean, it's kind of on hold. He's waiting for everything to get shipped there. That's, you know, it's, you got to remember, this is still Christmas Day, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, nothing's going to change in that aspect because he's waiting for it to get there. And that's Elliot's whole plan. If he robs them before the final stage is set, they can't do it because they don't have any money to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm sure we'll hear about it plenty once Elliot robs them.
Yeah. Once Mr. Robot and Darlene rob them, because that's really who's going to have to do this, right? Mr. Robot and Darlene started it all, really, and they're going to have to finish it all, I think.
Yeah. And you know what I said to Artie at the end of the episode after Dom calls in the officer down and Darlene leaves? And I thought to myself, I was like, crap, there's five episodes left, which is essentially the way I'm gauging it, 5 hours left in the day of Christmas. Dom's pretty much done for the rest of the show. I think Dom played her part, and I don't think we're going to see her again. You know,
surgery.
At the end of the season, maybe we'll see Darlene go and visit her in the hospital or something. But she's played her part. She's done. I mean, at least she lasted longer than Angela.
You know, I'm starting to think that Angela might not be dead. Did you see the promo for next week?
No, I did not.
In the promo for next week, White Rose is on the phone talking to Elliot, I guess, and says, "Oh, I need to talk to you. It's about your friend. It's about your friend Angela." And that's
he can bring people back from the dead. So,
well, when we saw Angela get killed, we saw it from 100 yards away. We heard the pop, and she fell. And Price didn't see it either. Price had his back to it. Like, he knew she was going to get killed, and he didn't watch it. This is not the show where, I hate to say this, like, if you don't see the body, the person's not dead, like on a lot of shows, right? And I was totally inclined to believe that, believe she was dead until White Rose said that in the promo. And I know I shouldn't trust promo people because God knows what
they mean, you shouldn't trust promo people.
I mean, we saw her get shot from 100 yards away and, like, could – I mean, killing her, you lose control. I don't know why I would think it. I was speculating, like, well, now she's dead. Now you have no leverage over Price or Elliot. And, like, well, I mean, you actually have other ways to leverage Elliot. But, you know, for her to be alive would be a way for – I don't know.
Yeah, but Price really thinks he's dead. So
he does.
You can't leverage somebody with somebody and then think somebody's dead. And Price is a non-factor now. I mean, since they're making – which I can't wait to see if Wellick shows up at the meeting, because last time we saw Wellick, he was staring at some purple squawky thing.
Last time we saw him was in the taxi cab yesterday in this week's episode where he's, like, on a video saying, like, Merry Christmas from E-Corp. Because he's the CEO, right? He was named the CEO, made a Christmas announcement, got killed. Actually, he wasn't made the CEO yet. He was the CPO.
No, that's the whole point of the meeting. That meeting is going to announce him as the new CEO.
Yeah. So, yeah,
it's funny. It's funny for Wellick. Here he was trying so hard just to be the CTO, and he just jumped right over everything, and now he's going to be the CEO.
Yeah. But he's dead. No, I don't really think Angela can't be alive and he can't be alive because this is not the show we're watching. If this show ended with some like total like pseudoscientific, science fiction-y, like time travel business, like we would all go insane. That's not the show that we're watching.
No.
Right? Can you imagine if Sam Rockwell just
happened? If they go alternate reality on us, I can live with it. But I really think that ultimately, I think what White Rose believes is possible. I mean, I could totally see the show, you know, getting to that moment they turn on the collider and nothing happens, and
yeah.
White Rose is like, you know, like, no, this isn't right. I calculated everything. I know this. I could see White Rose, you know, like I could see Elliot losing the battle, but winning the war because White Rose's ultimate goal isn't feasible. You know, I can see this total breakdown of White Rose at the end. I can see White Rose dropping to her knees at the end and going, no!
Yeah. That would be awesome. That would be pretty cool, yeah. So, we can't speculate where it's going in 5 years. 5 weeks will make ourselves insane. So,
no,
gotta stop with that.
Absolutely not. You know, and you know what, though? I mean, each week, I mean, you know, it's an overall season. Each week has been so amazing. Whether you know, I liked everything about an episode, or you know, one of us didn't like something or whatever. Like I think you got more out of the episode where they're walking around after the van crashed than I did. You know,
yeah.
I seem to enjoy last week's episode a little more than you did. You know,
yeah.
Each week is just so. It keeps turning another page and revealing a little more and revealing, you know, Sam Esmail has crafted something really wonderful. And, you know, I mean, even if the ending is not, yeah, it's week to week that he's doing this. Even if the ending isn't what either of us are, say we don't like the ending. Say we're both kind of like, oh, you know, I mean, we went through it with Lost. I mean, the journey, I could get a bad ending and still be okay because this journey has been amazing. Sam Esmail is an amazing artist, and he has crafted something truly original and wonderful. And honestly, I mean, there's part of me, I don't want Mr. Robot to ever win on the one hand. On the other hand, I can't wait to get to the end of this.
Right.
And I already can't wait to see what Sam Esmail gives us next, you know? I mean, could you imagine? I mean, think about this a second. This was originally pitched as a movie, and it was turned down as a movie. So he's like, hey.
Yeah, because, yeah.
Could you imagine? It would not have been as good. I mean, I'm glad whoever he pitched the movie to was like, no, screw you. And he said, I'm going to go on TV instead.
Oh, yeah. No, I can't even imagine how any of this could happen in 2 hours, like any part of it. It obviously was a very different story then. This is an almost perfect season, really. I mean, the things that I've complained about are minor things. This really is almost perfect, I think, and great, and the best thing I've watched since The Americans. Love it.
Yep, that's high praise right there because The Americans was good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really wish and hope that there's more Sam Esmails out there because original programming and ideas are so much better than half the dribble we get. Because, you know, there's so much out there. I mean, even, you know, Emergence, it's somewhat different, but it's still so the same from a lot of stuff we see, you know? You know, and the hundreds of remakes and reboots and revivals that we've been getting, whether it be movie or TV show, it's like, come on, there's got to be some originality out there. And thank God for somebody like Sam Esmail who is, I've never watched anything like this before. And, you know, it's funny. I think back to that first season when you were like, it's a show about a couple of hackers. It's entertaining, but we'll see. And I was like, but what if it's not about hackers? You're like, they're all hackers. Obviously, the show's about hackers.
I really thought that it was meditation on drug abuse and mental illness, and while it was, it became so much more than that so quickly.
But that's a good thing though, because if you set your standards low and you think, oh, this is all it's about, and then it turns you on its ear, then you go, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like Orphan Black. Orphan Black was so different and original. And then I remember season 3 of Orphan Black blew me away when we started seeing stuff from Beth's point of view. And I remember feeling revived, like the show was like new again. And that's how I feel about Mr. Robot in this final season. You know, I mean, every season's been pretty damn good, but this season has just been it's been, dare I say, a masterpiece so far.
Oh yeah, I think that's not a word that you use lightly, and I agree with you, for sure. It is pretty much a masterpiece.
You know, I'm gonna throw this out there real quick. One, so our listeners know that it's an option and something for you to mull over, but I really think that for the finale of Mr. Robot, I think we need to do an hour just on Mr. Robot, whether we do it on a different night or plan for Fandom Access to be a 3-hour show. We've been talking about Mr. Robot for over a little more than half an hour now. And this is only episode 8.
Yeah, we can do that. We can get that scheduled. So we can have a special show about the finale of Mr. Robot. I'm down for that. Let's do it.
Got a couple weeks to figure it out, but we'll do it. So,
All right. Great.
Unless you have anything else for this amazing show, I think we should call it.
I think that brings us to the end.
All right.
We'll call it tonight. All right. Well,
thank you everybody for listening.
You have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving, everybody, especially you, Karen.
Yeah. And Jamie, if you're listening.
And she's busy cooking.
Yeah.
And
we'll be back next week.
Yep. We'll be back next week. Hopefully everybody will have recovered from all the turkey.
Yep. All right.
All right.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Have a good night.
All right. Bye-bye.